Hello, and welcome to the MPM Interconnections Podcast. I'm Andrew Burns, your host, and I'm joined this week by Jesse Groner, founder and CEO of Triple Oak Power. Jesse founded Triple Oak with a very specific goal in mind, but we're gonna give him a chance to get into all that. But first, I'm going to give him a chance to just tell us a little bit more about his path to the founding of the company, because it's a pretty interesting tale. Jesse, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Happy to be here. So, I was lucky enough to get into renewable energy right after the year 2000, when I was fresh out of school and looking for a career. And in hindsight, it was right when the wind industry was really becoming a thing. There's kind of the modern era that began right around the year 2000. And I was one of the lucky ones to get into it. Moved to Portland, Oregon, got a job at Pacific Core, the utility, and an IPP business that they had gotten going. And long story short, rode the wave for about 20 years through Pacific Core, that became Iberdrola, and eventually Avangrid, and learned the art of wind development, which is a thing for those of us that have done this in our career. And so in around 2020, I had the opportunity to step out and found Triple Oak, having about 20 years of experience doing this. And it's been a great adventure. Very excited about what we're up to. And I think it turns out it was very well timed to create a company like Triple Oak at the moment we did. And, excited about where we are and where we're going.
Yeah, and it's really interesting in particular. Obviously, and you have a lot of experience in general, but such very specific experience that makes it really interesting. So not only just specifically in wind, but also specifically, it sounds like you were in the Oregon area for such a very long time. Well, do you want to tell us a little bit about, you know, just what you learned over the course of that time and how you saw the industry evolve? And then from there, we'll get into Triple Oak and you know, what you're sure trying to accomplish now.
Yeah, sure. Oregon was a destination for me. I grew up on the East Coast and lived the first 17 years of my life in the East Coast. And I knew I wanted to go West. I didn't really know much about the West as an East Coaster, but I knew the open spaces attracted me. Always lover of nature, hiking, being in the outdoors. So the West drew me and ended up in Oregon, somewhat by happenstance, got a job, frankly, which was just a job that turned into this career. But the thing that was interesting, having gotten established in Oregon, the Pacific Northwest, you know, historically for decades, really a generation, the region of Oregon, the Pacific Northwest, has been served by hydroelectric dams, right? Mm-hmm. Going back to the FDR days, and a big entity in the PAC Northwest is Bonneville Power Administration. You know, major transmission network built around a hydroelectric system, which is arguably the first generation of carbon-free electricity. And so in 2000 and forward, as the region got excited about air quote green energy, and when at the beginning of my career, it was still kind of a niche, and the concept of carbon-free, the concept of what were then called green tags, where you're willing to pay a little bit more for power if it's clean power. That was all kind of new, nascent, and exciting, but the region itself, it made a lot of sense because of the history of the dams and the general sentiment in the Pacific Northwest about cohesiveness with the environment, et cetera. So it was a great place to get this career started, and early adopters of what we do, we found in this region.
Cool. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear you talk about that. Oregon is one of the few states that I actually haven't been to yet. But my fiance's family really loves Oregon, so I'll have to get up there one of these days and check it out.
You sure do. It's a beautiful place, especially this time of year. Yeah, in the summertime.
Oh yeah, it sounds heavenly right now. We're dealing with some 100 degrees down here in Texas, getting up to heat index is up to 115, I think I've seen this week. So it would be refreshing for sure. Now, in terms of Triple Oak, I know that obviously the driving focus of what you guys are doing is onshore wind development. You want to tell us a little bit more about that and that focus of yours and why you wanted to focus on that and kind of what you've learned as you've been working through that over the last few years?
Yeah, our industry's gone through an evolution of wind, then solar, and now storage. So I think those are the big three technologies that you know, companies like ours are considering or working on to serve the grid. The thing about wind that attracts me and why I'm happy to be focused on wind these days, onshore wind, is it's different than the impact of solar. The footprint of wind being very spread out, very you know, complementary and synergistic with ongoing land uses, especially agriculture. So what we're doing by focusing on onshore wind at Triple Oak is finding locations where there's a good combination of factors, environmentally sound, economically sound for property owners, and we're not forcing the current use of property to change. We're suggesting there's a supplemental use of that property that can be beneficial. So that's been exciting and helpful to get you know, get interest and to continue down this path. And you know, again, I see all of these technologies being part of the solution to get to a carbon-free grid and just generally feeding our economy with carbon-free energy. Wind is a difficult development plan and implementation. And so being focused there, which you really have to do, has differentiated us, which is
Sure.
exciting.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And one thing that you mentioned there kind of piques my interest, which is, you know, it can be complementary to what the land is being used for, right? And not necessarily just like taking it over completely. And I think especially depending on where you are in the country, we see and we track here at NPM some pushback that developers will get from projects, particularly solar projects. For that reason, right? And so with you guys, have you found that there's less of that on the wind side? Obviously, I know it's kind of a barrier for, you know, environmental and getting everything, you know, permitted, right? But in terms of local resistance, are you seeing less of that than maybe, you know, you might expect for your typical solar developer?
I'd say anybody in the business of development, right? You have to understand development is change, right? You're changing, you're creating something, you're modifying something that wasn't there before, right? Or you're changing the landscape of what exists. So I, you know, we're developing new resources, and it is the deployment of technology, right? The footprint of it is very different than solar. And the, let's say, the public awareness of a wind farm, right? And the scale at which it's that awareness becomes clear is broader. So by definition, we have to build up a good community-based support for wind farm development, because there's many more stakeholders that get pulled in to the process. On the environmental side, you know, the appropriate siting of wind farms involves a combination of factors of review from avian species and ground-based species of animals to airspace, right? Where we have to deal with FAA, Department of Defense, and those interests that use the airspace for certain things. The physical visibility of wind farms from various viewpoints, right, is different, is at a larger scale than the low profile of a solar plant. So it's different, right? And we deal with different resource issues. I wouldn't say there's an avoidance of that. It's just those issues that we're dealing with are ones that are specific to our technology. And at Triple Oak, we're always thinking about the appropriate siting comes to both environmental impact as well as, you know, where populations are, where people live, and how they use property and how they view their own landscapes.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I know it's. I'd imagine it'd be a you know a huge challenge and quite an interesting process to narrow down these specific sites. When we met at ACP back in May, I know you kind of had like this pretty catchy tagline for me, which was like, you know, your thesis was where can large scale wind projects be built today, right? And that's what you were trying to figure out. So as you guys have worked through, you know, your pipeline and started building that pipeline out, what have you found? Have you found like it's focused in specific regions? Obviously, I mean, I imagine that, you know, wind resource is not distributed equally, right? So that obviously plays a role. But what are you guys finding in terms of you know, these sites that you guys are checking out?
Yeah, I'd say that is correct. And starting a company like ours from the beginning and staying true to a lot of companies use mission statements and those sort of things. We've stayed true to that initial question that we're in business to answer, which is where can large scale wind farms be sited onshore anymore in today's and tomorrow's market? And so that's not everywhere. Right. And so we're focused on broad parts of the Western U.S., the Midwestern U.S., and the Southeastern U.S. For different reasons in different regions. There are areas of the country where we're not currently active and primarily being driven by the challenge of finding those open spaces that we would view as appropriately compatible, or that, you know, those landowners or those land controllers or the jurisdictions of government would make it very difficult. So there's a natural sort of boundary as you go east where the country is owned in much smaller parcels.
Yeah.
And there are much more dense population centers, right? So there's kind of a natural boundary as you go east where it gets, I would say, exponentially harder to find those right locations at the scale of what we're developing. And then as you go all the way east, the offshore U.S. wind market is really starting to blossom, and a lot of projects are really starting to gain traction. So there comes a point where the eastern markets from a wind perspective going forward are going to be more served by offshore wind than finding sort of sections of area that might be available for onshore. Now, existing wind farms in the east eventually may be thought of for redevelopment. But in the meantime, offshore wind and the growth of offshore wind means we kind of have a natural eastern cutoff to how far we go.
Yeah.
So that's an example of the where it could make sense and where we might draw a line to say we're not going to go beyond that line for these reasons.
Yeah. And for the listeners who may be, you know, less familiar, do you want to sort of just give us a little overview of what you guys had developed so far and kind of where you are with your, building out that pipeline?
Yeah, we were just shy of 3 years old as an organization. So definitely a startup, and been very thankful to have very energy savvy and patient capital supporting our program from the very beginning. We are primarily backed by NCAP's Energy Transition Fund, right, and they've been very good to get our program going and to support the growth element of our business. In the just shy of 3 years, we've seen a fair bit of success in establishing new projects. We have brought one project to construction, our Prairie Switch Wind Farm in Wharton County, Texas. We commercially sold that to Fengate Asset Management, a very savvy and capable and deep infrastructure fund. And so really, we're in business as a trusted partner across the spectrum of development, from a landowner community perspective, investors from where we get our funding to run our business, as well as investors as to who are going to end up being long-term capital, with project partners. In that case, we arranged the turbine supply agreement with GE, and we arranged for the offtake agreement with Meta, a corporate buyer. So basically, we see ourselves as a trusted partner across the full value chain of the development of these renewable energy facilities with a focus on wind. And I think it's been a great journey to get this program established. We've got projects across a number of states and a lot of great communities that we're very excited to partner with. And some of those projects are starting to materialize where We can start to offer, the electricity to customers, arrange for the interconnection transmission, and really start to put the projects together again. And on the back of the success of Prairie Switch and getting that project going, I'm really pleased to be able to not just point back to our previous companies and what we've accomplished in prior to Triple Oak, that we have, a tangible real project under construction as developed by Triple Oak, and a number of new projects and new places that are moving along the staging of development for commercialization.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. I remember when we started up NPM in December 2019 and, having to explain ourselves. So it was really great when we could like really have something that we could point to, like, hey, this is us, right? You can remember who we are now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's nothing like a tangible success story to point to.
Yep. Right. Yeah, totally. Now with Prairie Switch, you already told us a little bit about that project and you ended up choosing to sell that asset. And I think that's really interesting because there's, I think for a lot of larger companies, and you have experience with this, obviously, at Avangrid, there's kind of a trend to retain projects and, kind of get more into like the asset management and ownership side of thing. Obviously Triple Oak is still very early in its pipeline, so it still kind of has some choices that it can make along that route. So I was curious just about your perspective on that and kind of your feelings on that. What do you expect Triple Oak's approach to be on project ownership, and how do you see that evolving as you guys kind of work through this pipeline?
Yeah, appreciate the question. I mean, I went through the full cycle at, PacifiCorp, PPM, Iberdrola, Avangrid, that company that I was at for almost 20 years that went through a few evolutions.
Right.
I always played the role involved with development, but being within the owner operator IPP throughout, as we grew at that old company and the development team was successful in delivering projects to construction and ultimately operations, quite frankly, it's a natural progression of a company to then be more weighted toward operating and implementing than being entrepreneurial and nimble in development, right? And upon reflection of that cycle of the success of bringing development through, I was very excited at the founding of Triple Oak to start with a focus of development. Because with that focus of development as the activity and wind, in this case, for the reasons I described, as the technology, that focus and that depth of experience has got our program going in a really good way. Now, where we go from here is part of the growth story, right? And I do think there will be a natural trend of this portfolio that we're creating of gigawatts of onshore wind plus in today and tomorrow's market is going to serve our industry and our market really well to have a great set of assets to bring to bear. And I think we're growing as an organization within that. We've stayed focused on development, and one of the reasons monetizing Prairie Switch at start of construction made sense is, as a small team, construction becomes a big resource drag. And it's not that our team doesn't have the experience in construction and operations and asset management. It's as the organization that we are and where we were at that time, it was, let's monetize, let's get this in the hands of a long-term owner so that we can focus on our development portfolio. And that's what we did. And we're staying involved at Prairie Switch under development service to make sure sort of it's landed effectively. But since we've been focused on the portfolio going forward.
Yeah.
And as we grow, I think we're going to grow within our market with IRA and all of the support in the environment around us for our industry and what we're doing. It's nothing but growth from here. So we're going to grow smartly as an organization. We're going to stay focused on those value add things that other people are otherwise doing so that we can be a useful partner across the spectrum, and we'll likely grow into a company that is able to take things as deep as it's going to make sense for the market and the ownership stack. And I think we can grow within that based on the organic program that we started with as a focused developer.
Sure. Yeah, that makes sense. It'll be interesting to kind of track that as it evolves. Now, you mentioned the IRA there. I think I feel like, at least from my perspective on this side of the fence, that a lot of the focus out of the IRA has been on storage in particular, and then also solar with some of the specific tax adders. But obviously, there are provisions in there that are gonna be beneficial to wind as well, and perhaps among those, the guidance we just got on tax transferability. Is there anything in there in particular that you're looking at, or that you guys have kind of worked with and experienced since the IRA passed, that you think are going to be particularly beneficial to what you guys are trying to do?
Yeah, I mean, having been a veteran of this industry for over 20 years, I've been through a lot of boom bust cycles of PTC extension.
Right.
So
Sure.
just by nature of having a pretty long dated shelf of understanding what framework we're in from that perspective is super helpful. So it's just that's the biggest thing out of IRA for what we're doing is the longer planning horizon that we can operate within. Then within that, there's the interplay of solar storage, solar now having the benefit of potential PTC storage, being able to have standalone tax credits. So you're not having to inefficiently, deploy storage just, for purposes of claiming the tax credit. It can kind of stand on its own. That's the right way to approach it in my mind. And so we're able to think about what these technologies can do with each other most efficiently. And then some exciting new things like green hydrogen that is in there is the new paradigm, right? That companies like ours are thinking about, not so much because we're going to pivot to something different. It's again back to that original premise of where can large scale wind farms be appropriately sited. This creates with green hydrogen and the downstream products related to it, new channels for paths to market that we
Right.
can see for our project. So areas for wind development open up because we're not always chasing the same grid for the same commodity, right? Those are the exciting things, the long dated nature, the more rationalized approach to the different technologies, getting their own version of credits, and then new emerging things like green hydrogen. I'll give the plug that one of the best things in my mind about IRA is, it supports concepts of energy community,
Yeah.
right? Which we're seeing a big where we're doing our projects, the left behind communities of coal and other thermal fossil generation, is an important element to the economic development story of the next wave of assets. And then the domestic aspects of getting this country building its own stuff again, I think has been a great motivator for rural communities, frankly, to acknowledge that this isn't just, stuff that's going to come from far away. There's an actual program related to getting U.S. manufacturing going again, which I think is, again, good policy. And with longer dated planning, I think as an industry, we can take this policy and do some really great projects with it.
Cool. As sticking on the topic of kind of long-term planning and things we'd like to see from federal policy. I know a lot of where Triple Oak is active, obviously, kind of the areas you outlined in the Midwest and in the West, and really everywhere in the U.S., really at this point, right, is seeing some pretty significant transmission constraints. And obviously, with wind projects, these are large projects that can take some time to sort of to get through that process. So you want to kind of tell us about what you guys have been facing and how you are navigating those constraints, and kind of what you'd like to see in terms of some of the solutions that are being thrown around.
I'd say, and we talked about this at Clean Power, Andrew, a little bit. I don't always jump to the we need to build more transmission, right? I actually, in my career, I've had the benefit of some success about thinking strategically about existing transmission infrastructure and starting with what I would call the low-hanging fruit of how do we use existing infrastructure more efficiently than we currently are. And sometimes through going that route, we can free up capacity, or we can look at capacity more flexibly than a megawatt is a megawatt is a megawatt. And as we hybridize the carbon-free sources and we distribute them across the system, I do think it's really important that we all look at transmission infrastructure optimization as an exercise. Now, that's not going to get all of the generation that we need to meet the demand, but there's a lot of low-hanging fruit that I think we can get to there. So we start there, you know, so some of our projects are specifically targeting things like that, or planning around the transition of thermal plant closures,
yeah,
and trying to marry up in those periods. But others of our projects are, for example, in MISO, looking at the long-range transmission planning going on, thinking about the next wave of what had been MVP lines that are now kind of a decade later going to be the next round of material upgrades. I do think the RTOs are good at spreading the costs of significant upgrades across the system, so no one entity bears that cost. In the West, they're still grappling with, is there going to be an RTO, and cost allocation is still a difficult thing. But part of why we can do what we do and find our niche within it is this stuff's complicated. And to be able to both go out and do the community-based development, to go into boardrooms and convince investors on both sides of transactions that there's going to be good deals to be had, to get into the how do the transmission network work and how can we optimize around it. That's the full suite of stuff that I'm excited of the program and the people within it that we've built and are continuing to build around, and why I truly believe we're kind of best in class in our space and continue to grow within it.
Cool. Well, awesome. Jesse, you know, I feel like I could talk with you forever, and I know we're going to wind down right here, but I do want to give you a chance here as we close to just give me maybe just a snapshot of what we can expect to see from Triple Look over the next 12 to 18 months as you kind of work through this pipeline, you know, in those areas that you discussed.
Yeah. We are going to continue to grow. We're going to continue to grow, not in too focused of a lane per se, because the one thing about things is they're changing more than they're staying the same, but you're going to see us grow as a team. You're going to see our projects materialize, and we'll be talking about them more, you know, more out there in the world, especially as we get deeper into things like permitting processes that by definition have to be more public. And you're just going to see, you know, the continuation of our thoughtful approach here to make sure we really are answering that question of where can big wind farms go. And happy to work with you and the NPM team to continue to stay updated on what we're up to.
Awesome. Well, that sounds great. We'll stay in touch. And thanks again for joining us. It's been a great conversation.
You bet, Andrew. Thank you.
All right. Thanks.
Yeah, bye.